back, everybody. It's time again to the Private Investing and Business Hour on OC Talk Radio, where we discuss the insider information that you need to know about raising capital in today's changing environment. So if you're an investor, an entrepreneur, pull up a chair, slip off your shoes, and let's get started here with our host. The host today, Jim Butts from CalCap Partners.
Why, thanks, Paul. And I'm here today with Michael Hohmeyer. Did I pronounce that right, Michael?
Hohmeyer.
Hohmeyer. I knew that. I just did ask you about that, too. Michael Hohmeyer. And he's with Hohmeyer and Law. And Michael is in an interesting space from an investor standpoint, also from an entrepreneur standpoint. It's really this whole idea about using alternative funding and financing, especially some sort of specialty projects that you're on called EB-5. And it's a program that's been around for some time. And I'll let Michael explain the program, what he's doing. And then also there's a conference coming up that Michael's going to participate in, and we'll give him an opportunity to talk about what he's going to be doing there. And let's see where that goes. So, Michael, welcome to the radio show. And why don't you take a minute or two and tell people who you are, what you do, what you're focused on.
Sure. Hohmeyer and Law is a boutique business law firm. It means we're on the smaller side. We specialize in providing general outside counsel services to medium and small-sized businesses. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we help those businesses do is raise financing because, you know, without money, businesses can't do a thing. They can't hire, they can't grow, they can't expand, they can't enter new markets. So as a way of helping those businesses and selfishly helping ourselves, because if clients have more that they're able to do, then, of course, they can help hire us to help them draft their contracts. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we're engaged in is helping clients raise money from private investors, and that, of course, is an area of activity that's governed by U.S. securities laws, mm-hmm. the laws that govern investments and getting financing from private investors. So we have this skill set, and along came in 2010 our introduction into this EB-5 arena, which is exactly as you say, it's an alternative financing avenue for businesses that can't get all the financing they need from domestic sources. And of course, once the recession hit in 2008, 2009, the banks stopped lending small businesses in particular, and real estate development as well, were having a devil of a time getting access to money.
Right.
So when folks heard that there were some people using this unusual U.S. immigration program to raise capital from foreign investors in order to grow their businesses, more and more businesses said, well, look, we've got to look into this too. I mean, this program's been around for 20 years. We've never heard of it, but it's an alternative financing device. Let's take a look at it. So we found out it was very much like what we had been doing in the private securities realm domestically, helping businesses raise financing from investors. Right. It has this immigration overlay to it. And once we got up to speed on the immigration side of it, we were able to deploy our skill set in U.S. securities law to helping businesses here access foreign capital. And that has led to a huge improvement in so many areas, businesses getting financed, communities getting businesses to get established and to grow and to hire people in the local communities, putting people to work. And all of this coming at zero taxpayer expense has meant it's been a real win-win. You hear that cliche all the time.
Right.
But it's really been fantastic for a lot of communities that can't get money from the regular sources here to help their communities grow.
Well, you know, there's some other things that I'm pretty much aware of with this program also, Michael. One of them is that this actually is more of a loan because you end up having to pay the money back. But under normal circumstances of getting a loan, one of the things that the entrepreneur has to do is get every asset in the business tied up under a UCC-1. I don't think that's required in this kind of an environment, is it?
It's actually not required, but of course, standard business practice is what guides practice in the EB-5 area. So The developer or the business that's going to raise the financing from the foreign investor needs to show the investors how they're going to get them the two things that the investor wants. He's looking for a green card. Mm-hmm. She's looking for a return of principal. So those are the two requirements that every U.S. business has to have a plan for accomplishing in order to sell their investment to the prospective foreign investor.
But that plan doesn't require them tying up assets, does it?
It does not require them, but usually that's what's done here
as
a part of a financing transaction. So, not surprisingly, it's also done in EB-5. The investors want to know, look, if I give you my money, not only do I want you to spend it on a project that has a chance of creating the jobs, but I also want to know that I have some shot of getting my principal back. And so I'd like to see security for my loan. I'd like to see some collateral so that in the event that the business isn't successful, and these all by law are required to be at-risk investments, they can't be sure things. They can't have guarantees. So the investors are required to put their money at risk. So, of course, they want to minimize the risk as much as possible. They're looking for those same sorts of security items that you mentioned, Jim. They're looking for collateral. They're looking for a UCC-1, or they're looking for a deed of trust if there's going to be real estate that they can secure. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, they're all trying to reduce the risk wherever possible, the same way domestic deals do.
Actually, I'm familiar with a number of investments that were done in the city of Murrieta in Southwest Riverside County. And they had lots the first thing was a strip mall, and they had another one right across from the courthouse. It was all done with EB-5 money, and it was stuff that probably would not have happened if that money wasn't around. So,
well, that's absolutely right. I mean, and that's been one of the biggest things about EB-5 that often doesn't go remarked on. It's great that you bring it up, because everybody hears about the big flagship projects that are, you know, we worked on a $400 million raise for a casino in Las Vegas, and there have been close to $1 billion EB-5 projects raising money in New York City or Los Angeles. And, you know, everybody figures, okay, well, those places are getting benefited. But, you know, for somebody to raise $40 or $50 million for three or four assisted living facilities outside Los Angeles, not inside.
Right.
You know, that's something that's really helping communities that otherwise don't have the access to capital that you find in downtown L.A. or in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. You got a hospital getting built in Arizona, out in the middle of nowhere. But it's a community that, you know, to get people to a hospital, you have a 2 or 3 hour drive. And so they built a hospital using EB-5 financing. That's helping the local communities. And really, that's the most fun in doing EB-5 projects. The fact that where the banks are not interested in going, sometimes even the federal government or state financing is not really interested in going, or it's too complicated, the fact that EB-5 can go to these places allows not just the big metropolitan areas, but smaller communities really to benefit.
Well, I think that it's really great. Now, I remember that one of the things that was sort of beneficial from a Murrieta standpoint, if you look at Murrieta, the city itself was not economically depressed, but Southwest Riverside County was, and they were able to come in on the aspect of having $500,000. And you might explain a little bit about the way that that works. It's $1 million or $500,000 based upon whether they're having in a distressed area. But Murrieta was able to use that, the lower amounts, because the whole area was considered, not just, they were fine. They would have, if it wasn't around. I live in San Diego County. In San Diego County, you couldn't do the $500,000 ones because it's, you know, it's considered to be not financially distressed.
Right. So the standard minimum EB-5 investment is $1 million at the moment. Mm-hmm. There is legislation pending in Congress. It looked like the investment amount is going to be increased. It hasn't been increased in 25 years since the program was initially proposed and adopted. And people have said, hey, it's time. Let's, you know, things have changed, and let's provide for an increase in the minimum investment. Right now it's $1 million. And, however, there is a reduced minimum that applies to projects that are going to be done in an area of high unemployment. Not a poor area. It could be in addition. But we're not talking about development that has to take place or projects that have to be funded in poor areas of town. These are just areas of high unemployment. Mm-hmm. And some more middle-class areas may not be economically distressed, but they may have high unemployment. Right. And that allows those communities to access investment at the lower amount. And, you know, from an investor's perspective, look, if he can get the same benefit and run the same risk on a $500,000 investment, he'd rather do that than have to put in $1 million. So sure. It's easier for the business to appeal to investors because the investors are looking to find investments at the safer, lower investment amount, which is also expected to increase, by the way, as, you know, when the law gets reauthorized, which mm-hmm. is coming up shortly.
So if I was an entrepreneur and I was listening to this and I might be looking to do some sort of expansion or go out and do a money raise, what are the kinds of, are there any restrictions on you know, use of funds or, you know, how funds would, you know, what types of projects that are being worked on that I would have to consider to see if this is a program right for me?
You know, it's a great question, and personally, it's one of the most exciting things about the EB-5 program when I speak about it, looking at it from my selfish perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are a law firm that specializes in working with medium and small-sized businesses.
Right.
Because of EB-5, we've been fortunate enough to get pulled in because we've had a lot of experience in a relatively short period of time, and we've been able to work on really, really big projects that might ordinarily go to larger law firms. But we have a right. soft spot in our hearts for our typical client, who, again, is a medium-sized or a smaller size and often a startup business as well. And EB-5 can be used to finance any business whatsoever in any industry and really of any size, so long as the funding will result in the creation of new U.S. jobs, not right. jobs for the investor and his family. They don't right. count, even if they go to work for the project that they put the money into. It has to be new U.S. jobs being created. And, you know, those jobs can come from a big real estate development, or they can come from opening up a Starbucks franchise on your local corner and everything in between. So it's great that small business has the opportunity to participate in this program, and those people with the smaller business or the new business can actually access this capital as well. They don't get as much attention right off the bat as some mega development in downtown New York, perhaps, but there are some investors somewhere that don't want those massive projects. They want something smaller than they get their arms around and that they can feel that they're invested in that particular thing, whether it's a hospital or a senior facility or a charter school. And they can point to that and say, hey, that's my investment. I did that. Mm-hmm. And so there is a percentage of prospective investors worldwide who want to participate and come to the States and bring their family in finding these smaller projects. So these businesses, the smaller, more modest businesses, they get to play too. And that's really great from our point of view.
Well, one of the things that I think is very interesting about this is if you look at the statistics, if you had like Kaufman, Center for Entrepreneurial Research in Kansas City, basically came out and said that that if they look at it, that there was not one net new job that was created by companies older than 5 years. And of course, people would say, "No, well, look, you know, General Motors just, you know, they hired, you know, 25,000 people." And my answer to that would be, "Great. When they get to the other 500,000 that they laid off, then they'll create one net new job." But even companies like Yahoo or Facebook, they created an enormous number of jobs at that point under 5 years. It ends up that those kind of companies starting up have the most difficult time getting financing. If you go to a bank, they want you to be in business for 2 years. And then you have to, you know, even when the Obama administration came out and changed some of the rules about getting the money, I was in an area where I was with a group of bankers, and I said, "Well, how many of you had done these loans?" "None of them." And I said, "Well, why not?" And they said, "Well," I said, "you know, it's supposedly now 90% guaranteed by the government, 10%, I don't even know who it's guaranteed by." And they said, "Well, the problem is that the SBA came along and said, make sure you'll be able to get back this money, and you tell that to a banker, and all we can say is, okay, that says guarantees, and for us, guarantees are all personal, and it's real estate. So now you're asking them to, along with everything else that you put up all your real estate, and at the same time, I hope, since I'm the one that's editing this, I'm not going to edit this out. We were willing to give four oil companies $20 billion on a handshake that they didn't need, but we can't come up with enough money to fund what's the real job creation engine in the United States properly? That doesn't make any sense. So if foreign investment can come in and fill that bill, I'm all for it.
Well, you know, you've really got your finger, Jim, on the pulse of what drives EB-5. Mm-hmm. What has driven EB-5 has not been from the outside, a slew of people who would love to realize their dream of relocating to the U.S. and becoming Americans, although that is a huge part on the demand side of EB-5, of course. Really, what's driven the explosion in EB-5 over the last 6 years that we've been involved has been the fact that a U.S. business can't get funding here,
right,
either at all or on terms that give the business a decent chance of actually surviving or growing to the next level on the ladder, or being able to leverage financing if they're looking for part of their money. I mean, a bank that 10 years ago foolishly said, you only need 5% down or 0% down and we'll give you more money than you know what to do with, those guys are all gone. Now the same banks are saying, well, we need you to come in with 40 or 50% down. And a business says, well, where the heck am I going to get 40 or 50? 5 or 10 I can do, but I can't do 40 or 50. The EB-5, they get not only the financing that they need to run the business, perhaps, or start the business, or grow the business, perhaps exclusively, or they can come in, count the EB-5 as their equity, go to the bank and say, look, between my own real equity of 10% plus a 30% EB-5 financing chunk, mm-hmm, I've got the 40% that you want before you're going to give me the 60% of a bank loan. It's really been the failure of the U.S. banking system, right, and the U.S. business financing systems to offer alternatives to the medium and small-sized businesses, right, that have driven these businesses in desperation to look elsewhere. And it just so happens that the only area in the U.S. economy that's really creating jobs is a private industry, right, of EB-5, where it's all zero taxpayer money. This is all foreign investor money that's creating the jobs and helping these businesses get going. And who wouldn't view that as a real win-win for the U.S. economy and the U.S. taxpayer,
well,
and U.S. business?
I think, look, there was a book that was written by Jim Clifton, who's the CEO of Gallup, called The Coming Jobs War. And I love that book. I think that he did a really good job of putting something together. And he basically said that if the United States is going to continue to be in the number one position in worldwide GDP, we have to do something about how do we create jobs, because there's not going to be enough people to be able to do that. And we don't want all the jobs leaving the United States. So we need to be able to come up with something. And I love this program because of the things that it can do. And it can give people access to capital that they would not ordinarily be able to get. I know that there's a process to be able to get it, but at least it's something that, you know, you can see that there's not some, oh, I gotcha, because a lot of things you hear about, you say, oh, that's really good, and then you hear the I gotcha. There were some things that were done for veterans, for example, that were coming out with a loan, yeah, and it's like, well, how many applied for it? Well, the only people that could actually apply for it were people that didn't need the money.
Didn't need the money.
Right. So what's the point? Everybody thinks they're doing the right job, and it's like, it's not my problem. Well, it's got to be somebody's problem, and I'm glad that there's something around that's being able to do that. So so there's a couple things. One of them is, if I'm an entrepreneur and I'm interested in something like that, what's the process I should use to find out if I qualify?
Well, that's a great question. The first part of the process, because the EB-5 program, it's attacked by some folks saying, look, it's a way for rich foreigners to buy a green card, mm-hmm, by just putting down some money, which they get back later. Setting aside the fact that that money has to be at risk and that there have been people, unfortunately, whose investments have not panned out, it's primarily the case where jobs have to be created. The price of admission, the price of the green card, isn't the money that's loaned. It's the fact that the consequence of loaning that money is that new permanent U.S. jobs in sufficient numbers to satisfy the program's requirements are created, that those jobs have to be proven to the satisfaction of a doubting U.S. government, and that those jobs have to be persistent. That is, they're not temporary, they're not seasonal, they're going to be there tomorrow and the next year and the next year unless a business happens to fail, which businesses unfortunately do. So really, EB-5 is a job-creating program, and that means the business has got to have a plan showing that the investment of the funds that it raises is going to result in either the business itself directly hiring people onto its own payroll, and or that the economic impact in the surrounding community of the business's expenditure of money is going to create jobs out in the community. If you think about economic impact jobs, you know, if a business adds people onto its payroll because it's selling more of its own products, its suppliers of goods and services are going to be getting more business, and they're going to be hiring more people on their own payrolls. They're hard to track, those payrolls, because they're not the payroll of the business itself, but the government has recognized for 60 or 70 years that this sort of economic activity breeds further economic activity. And, of course, the new employees of the new business and the additional employees of the providers of goods and services in the other businesses, all of those people who now have jobs and have money spend that money. They go to the restaurant, they go to the movies, they go to the laundromat, you know, they buy a new car. And so the money that is spent on an EB-5 project has an economic impact in the community. And so a business is allowed to count both the jobs on its payroll that it directly creates, as well as the jobs that a trained economist can certify to the U.S. government are being created as a result of the investment of funds into the U.S. business. So it's, you can count direct and indirect jobs, but again, the key is you've got to show job creation. So any business that's contemplating EB-5 is going to engage an economist and do a calculation about how many people they're going to put on their own payroll and how many jobs will be created in the surrounding community as a result of their proposed economic activity. Once they know how many jobs that their business will be credited with creating, you can then do the math. There's a requirement that every investor's investment cause 10 new jobs to be created. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to create 100 jobs, divided by 10 means you can bring in 10 investors. And if those investors are coming in at the reduced investment minimum of $500,000 because the business is located in an area of high unemployment, then we know that from those 10 investors, the business will get $5 million. If that $5 million will be enough for the business to carry out successfully its plan, whether that's all the money it's raising or that's part of the capital stack, then the business says, look, you know, we're going to be in a position to propose to an interested possible investor, we do have a reasonable basis for thinking we'll create enough jobs as a result of your investment to not only get you the green card, but our business will grow to the point that after 5 years or so, we will have a reasonable exit strategy to repay your investment. And so you have a good shot of getting your investment returned to you. So this is really the driver. It's really job creation. And almost any business is going to create jobs as a result of, getting financed and increasing its economic activity.
So, Michael, I hate to interrupt you, but we've actually been talking for like almost 23 minutes. So this is great. I'd like to continue this on the other side of our commercial if you're going to be available.
Absolutely.
Paul, take us to a commercial.
So let's do a shout out to the sponsor of today's program, CalCap Partners. CalCap Partners is the manager of venture capital funds specializing in investing in kind of what we're talking about today, small to medium-sized technology-based businesses with high growth potential. CalCap manages equity and debt investments into companies that meet the investment criteria of our various funds. Managers of previous investment transactions collectively exceeding U.S. $2 billion. That's what they bring to the table here. And operations in the U.S., California, New York, Canada, including Ontario and British Columbia. And they include a global network of strategic resources consisting of managerial talent and capital resources that truly add value to our portfolio companies. For more information on all the things that they provide and all the things that they do and the funds that they work with, why not just visit the website, CalCap Partners, that's plural, CalCap, PARTNERS, calcappartners.com. And now back to our show.
Well, Paul, thanks for getting us back from the commercial, and I'm going to continue the conversation. Michael was pretty much involved in some good conversation about this EB-5 program.
Yes.
Could you go through kind of the process that somebody would either go through as an entrepreneur looking for this?
Sure. So the business has to have a plan for growth, including hiring additional people as a result of getting the capital, whether it's all EB-5 or partly EB-5. And if the business can show the jobs, then and a reasonable chance of creating the jobs in sufficient number, clear everybody who might be invited to invest, then the business puts together a formal plan, often prepared by an EB-5 business plan writer, because it's a different kind of a business plan than a regular conventional American business plan. It has to say certain things that the EB-5 program requires and not provide for things that the EB-5 program requires. And in addition to a business plan, an economist may be engaged in order to count those indirect non-payroll jobs if those additional jobs are vital to the business having enough jobs to satisfy all of the investment monies that it's looking to raise.
Okay.
That team would also include securities lawyers such as my firm. We actually write the investment documents that comply with the U.S. securities laws, both the federal and state securities laws, because every time a business raises money from investors, that's a securities transaction. Of course, investors have to be given all information about the investment opportunity before the investor comes in. So our job is to write those papers telling the investor, look, this is the upside. We hope everything is going to go this well, but there are risks in this investment, and here's what those risks are. Mm-hmm. And by the way, your money will or will not be secured by a deed of trust or a UCC-1 filing or other assets of the borrower, so that you know how risky your investment is. Here are the risks of your industry, depending upon is the investment a film project versus a real estate development project, different risks for different types of businesses. And so once all of those papers are ready, the business goes to investors, and it goes to investors one or both of two different ways. One is the business goes overseas, and it hires a broker, a salesman, in the foreign countries, because almost every American or other foreign investment opportunity is prohibited by other countries' laws from being sold directly to their citizens. So you have to go through, if you're going to China, you have to go through a broker who's licensed by the Chinese federal government or provincial government. Those brokers will sell your investment opportunity to their countrymen for a fee, of course. That's one avenue to go where the U.S. business goes overseas. The other is often interested possible investors reach into the United States and say, hey, we've heard about this crazy EB-5 program you guys have. We're really interested. We would love to put our kids into college in the U.S., or we're trying to escape terrorism or something, and we would love to relocate to someplace safe, whatever the motivation may be. And they ask, do you, Mr. Business Person, or do you have your own project, or do you, Mr. Immigration Lawyer, or to me as a securities corporate lawyer, do you have any EB-5 projects that you know of that are open for investment? In which case, we can say, yes, we do. What are you interested in? If you're interested in, you know, an agricultural project or a manufacturing project or an oil and gas project or a real estate development project and not in something else, for example, investors out of the Middle East were not interested in funding a casino in Las Vegas. So, you know, you ask the investor, what are you interested in investing in? Do you want something big? Do you want something small? Do you have any preference? Do you care about the industry? Do you care about the location? And then once you know what the investors are interested in, then they can be introduced to projects that fit their criteria. And so those are the two primary ways, outbound and inbound, for a business to attract investors. And really, there's an extra wrinkle, Jim. And that wrinkle is a U.S. business can do a surprising amount of finding investors just by talking to people in the elevator, talking to people in the line at the grocery store, talking to people and say, hey, I happen to have an EB-5 investment. Do you know anyone who might be interested? Mm-hmm. We know what we're doing enough to be able to offer an immigration benefit to those willing to invest in our business. And we're looking for investors. If you happen to know anyone, it would be a real service if you could introduce us, if you could matchmake. So that should never be overlooked. A lot of businesses they come across people all the time, both here permanently and here temporarily, who are saying, gee, we've heard about EB-5. Are there any projects around? How do we find a project that we might be interested in investing in? Hmm. Sometimes it's word of mouth. Sometimes it's calling a lawyer. It doesn't hurt to call people who are active in the EB-5 area, of course. But oftentimes, it almost happens by accident, just because people will chat.
There's I'm trying to remember what the name of it is. It's some sort of a regional office or something where somebody goes out and they've already pre-qualified people.
Yeah, there's something called Regional Center, which is an administrative designation that is given by the Immigration Service to a business that kind of pre-qualifies says that the business will engage in overseeing projects and providing information to the U.S. government so that the U.S. government can track how are things going in the EB-5 industry. And in return for that, a regional center is able to give to the projects, the U.S. businesses that it sponsors, the right to count non-payroll jobs in addition to payroll jobs.
Okay.
So for those businesses that are big enough to need those indirect non-payroll jobs, they all go looking for a regional center to sponsor them, because that's the only way you're allowed to count the indirect jobs. And in return for that, the feds say, every year you have to give us information about how things are going so we can monitor things. And, you know, if somebody's a bad guy, hopefully we can catch him earlier on rather than later and stop him and protect investors and also protect the integrity of the program.
Now, it seems that these are, as I mentioned before, they're more like loans than they are investments. So they don't get equity in the company, I don't think, but they got to pay the money back. What's the time frame on the payback?
You know, the EB-5 investors are required to make an equity investment.
Okay.
However, that equity investment can be aggregated with other EB-5 investors, and all of those individuals' money is put together, and then the money can be deployed into a project, either in the form of a loan, mm-hmm. which is the usual case, like you said, or sometimes an equity investment too. It kind of doesn't matter, because either way that the money goes into the project, usually the investors want to get repaid as soon as they can.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the popularity of EB-5 and the fact that the government cannot hire people fast enough to keep up with the demand, the processing time on the government side is unfortunately slow. So the investors are having to remain invested for 5 years, 6 years, maybe 7 years before they can hope to get their principal back, which is usually what they get with nominal interest. Why are they willing to loan $500,000 or $1 million at a tiny interest rate? Because they're getting a green card.
Yes.
And on this one time, they're willing to accept less money because they're getting a different benefit. Once they have gotten that green card, they're probably going to be looking for the standard American return on investment, which is a lot greater than an EB-5 return. But, hey, it's great for the program because it allows the EB-5 investor to be willing to loan his money at interest rates far less than what a U.S. business could get if it could get the money from a U.S. bank. The bank's going to charge you 6, 7, 8%, and the EB-5 money is costing you 3 or 4%. I mean, that's a huge difference to the business.
Yeah, even if you're thinking, Michael, about the concept of that's used a lot is convertible notes. When somebody's doing venture debt and they're using convertible notes, the interest rates are in the 20 to 30%. They're not in the 3 to 4%. And it sounds like this can actually work somewhat like a convertible note, that the monies can convert to equity at some point in time.
Yeah, they can. And some businesses say, look, we're going to repay your money at the five-year point or the seven-year point, assuming that we can. If we can't, though, we're not going to default. We're going to convert you into equity. We're going to give you a permanent piece of the action here, and we're not going to let you face the risk of devastation. Now, of course, a business can always fail, and since these investors' investment is required to be at risk, you should expect, and investors are always warned, hey, this is not a sure thing. We think it's going to work. We think we have a reasonable basis for thinking it's going to work, and here's why, but we're not going to lie to you and tell you 100% no problem, nothing bad can happen. That's just not honest. As a matter of fact, it's unlawful. So the investors, though, can be protected to a great degree by giving them equity if their loan needs to be converted because the terms of the loan can't be fulfilled.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. The I know that in dealing with entrepreneurs in the past, a lot of them have some sort of expectation. So if we want to set the expectations right, if you were starting the process today, what's the time frame when you might be able to expect money? Because, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs don't go out and look for money until they need it like 3 months from now, and that's just not going to happen.
Sure. That's a really phenomenal question, Jim. And I will tell you that in most cases, there's this beginning education process that a business has to be introduced. They have to get their arms around it. They don't have to become experts in it like I am or a business plan writer or an economist becomes an expert, because those guys, including me, we're all hired by the business. We do what we do so that the business doesn't have to get a law degree and get up to speed on securities law in my case. Instead, we're part of a professional team that a business will put together in order to get the offering ready to propose to prospective foreign investors in these foreign countries or country. And parenthetically, I can note that you can get investors from any country or combination of countries. Okay. So you can get a bunch out of China. You can get people from India at the same time. You can get investors out of Russia, the Middle East. You can get investors pretty much from any country where there are interested people. And, of course, in almost every country, there are people interested. The countries with strong economies, obviously, are a better source for investors, but it can often surprise people. You'll get investors coming out of South Africa, Nigeria, Argentina, some countries where the economies are not so strong, but people have saved or scrimped or they've made it when times were good, and they're now saying, I'd like to participate. And so the business has to look at, once they are ready to embark on an EB-5 project, it can take anywhere between 2 to 4 months to put an EB-5 offering together if that offering is going to go overseas and solicit strangers. If they already have investors in mind, then once those papers are ready, they can give them to the investors, and hopefully the investors will sign up promptly. If they have to go and basically sell to strangers and try to interest those people in taking a risk investing in my particular investment as opposed to somebody else, that process to get all the investors can take up to 6 months. So we're looking at a process of 2 to 4 months to get the documents put together. A budget could be $125,000 to $150,000 to pay all of the people on putting together the papers that are required for a project that's going to raise $20, $30, $40 million or $100 million. So you've got 2 to 4 months to get the docs together. You've got up to 6 months to bring in all of the investors. Maybe longer if you're looking for 200 or 300 investors, maybe less if you're looking for 5 or 10. But the average project takes about 6 months to find all its investors. And then once the investors start coming in, they have to go through the immigration process. Mm-hmm. And the Immigration Service looks very carefully at, well, three things. One is that the project, the business, is an EB-5 compliant business, that it is a business that fits within what the EB-5 program's requirements are, new U.S. job creation. Number two, the investor is looked at for his personal characteristics. Was he ever convicted of the equivalent of a U.S. felony in his home country? Was he involved in terrorism or drug smuggling? Or did he ever have a communicable disease? I mean, there's a whole 18 or 19 reasons why anybody can be denied a visa, whether it's a tourist visa or a school visa or an EB-5 visa. And then the third thing that the feds look at really carefully is the investor has to prove his money is clean, that it's not coming from an illegal source. And by the way, the burden's on the investor. The government doesn't have to prove the investor's money's dirty. The investor has to prove that his money is clean. And a lot of investors coming from countries where they don't have a lot of the paperwork that we have a hard time satisfying the U.S. government that their money is clearly clean, and the government will not hesitate to say to somebody, sorry, go home, you didn't meet your burden, you're going home. And of course, then the business has to go find a replacement, which means if you're a smart business, you look at people when they're first coming to you saying, hey, I'm interested in your project. It's like, well, wait a minute. Can you show your money is clean? Because if you can't, I don't even want to start the process with you. So really, those are that process, that immigration review process by the U.S. government can take right now somewhere between 13 and a half to 14 months to get the investor through the immigration process.
That's actually kind of is something that somebody has to be able to keep in mind. And I'm assuming that the $125,000 to $175,000 up front to get all these things in place has to be paid before any of the money comes in. So they have to be able
to... Well, it's paid to... Yeah, exactly. It's paid to the professionals who each contribute documents to putting the whole offering together. Like, I'll do the investment, the offering, the securities documents. The business plan writer generates the BP. The economist generates the jobs report. So all these people, of course, are getting paid for writing their papers. And then the business collects all these papers together and takes them overseas. So really, that's the budget for the U.S. business to pursue financing from, I would say, probably $20 million or more. For projects that are smaller in size than that, it can be significantly less money, and the paperwork is less, and therefore it takes the professionals less time, and therefore costs less. So your budget could be as little as $30,000 or $50,000 for a business that's looking to bring in two or three investors at $500,000 piece, rather than $20,000 or $30,000 or $200,000 or $300,000.
So one of the things that I'm thinking about, Michael, is that if you look at some businesses, technology-based businesses, one of the things that they're doing, there's a series of rounds of financing that they go through from, you know, friends and family, which is the worst thing you can do in your life. If you can avoid to do it, do not do that, because you're going to lose your friends and you still got to live with your relatives. but then there's a sort of like a seed round and an A round and a B round and C round. Has anybody in an entrepreneurial sitting come to you and said, so here's my overall plan for the next 5 to 6 years. I'd like to be able to use this and trigger having subsequent allotments of money coming in at certain times to avoid this whole venture capital space, which is in some cases and in some areas broken.
Yeah, that's actually really true and vitally important. One of the first things we do, because we're business lawyers more broadly than just securities lawyers. I mean, securities lawyers are focused on disclosure. Give me information, and I'll write it up for you in the papers. But business lawyers look at business more broadly. So for us, it's helpful to our clients that we do more than just disclose. We also advise businesses on an ongoing basis outside of EB-5 and outside of business financing broadly. So that, you know, we know how to read balance sheets. We know how to read financial projections. We know how to ask questions like, show me, prove me. You know, this is your say-so, but what are your assumptions on your pro forma projections? And so our job is to help a business understand whether or not EB-5 is a reasonable alternative and what it would take to access that capital and how doing so would fit into their longer-term financing prospects. Because if it's structured wrongly, this usually doesn't have to be the case at all, but it sometimes is done wrongly, then the venture capital investors who come later after EB-5, they look at the structure and say, well, this doesn't work for us.
Right.
And, of course, you can't change it once you've got the EB-5 investors in until you take them out.
Yes.
And if they're going to be with you for 5 or 6 or 7 years, you're stuck with them for 5 or 6 or 7 years. And so you don't want to set up a structure that's going to discourage angel investors or venture capital investors or other capital partners. Those who understand EB-5 as other capital partners are not spooked by the fact that EB-5 is either contemplated or it's already been brought into the project. usually EB-5 demands very little. The investor wants to be credited with job creation, and that's where he gets his green card from. Usually there's no competition because an American doesn't need job creation. He's already got his citizenship.
Sure.
So he's not competing for those jobs with EB-5 investor. And, of course, then the EB-5 investor is getting a very small interest rate, which means his money is almost free. Usually venture capital investors and other capital partners like the fact that the money is inexpensive.
Sure.
And the money doesn't require a lot. It may not even have much in the way of collateral, or it may have collateral that can be subordinated. So in a lot of ways, if an EB-5 money can be friendly to other capital coming in at the same time or down the road.
Okay, so we got a couple minutes left, and I want to give you some time to talk about the conference that you're going to be attending and, you know, what it is, when it is, where it is, and what are you going to be talking about?
Well, it's the conference upcoming is the Global Entrepreneurship Alternative Funding Forum. It's on November 6, 2015, at the Century Plaza Hotel in Century City.
Okay.
It's pretty much the whole day, and all of the speakers, the experts, are all entrepreneurial-minded folks. We're all talking about basically the same thing from our own unique perspectives. How can businesses that need capital access it from alternative financing sources? EB-5 is an alternative financing source with its own odd realities, and I'm going to be chiming in about those, trying to spread the good news to people to let them know that this is a financing alternative that they should definitely look into, along with all the other fine experts who are going to be chiming in from their point of view. There are going to be people there talking about crowdfunding. There are going to be people there talking about alternative capital, private equity, private debt. Okay. There are going to be a couple of institutional folks there as well. So this is really an opportunity for business owners and entrepreneurial-minded folks to come out and really get a great hands-on education that's talking about practicalities as opposed to hypotheticals. We're really talking about, like many of the questions that you asked, Jim, because you're a practical-minded guy, or you wouldn't bother asking how much does it cost and how long does it take. I mean, this is the nitty-gritty stuff.
Right.
And that's what this forum is all about.
And if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way that they can do that?
Oh, it's easy. They can just email me. We're happy to respond to all email inquiries. And that's at michael@homeierlaw.com, which is spelled HOMEIERLAW.com.
Michael, it was a pleasure to talk to you. It was great information. And I'm really interested in this. I actually may have some clients to send you.
Fantastic. Jim, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thanks. Take care.
You've been listening to the only show that talks about the real world examples, the real life stories of venture capitalists today. It's California Business Investing Hour, brought to you by CalCap Partners, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.